Hello, everyone, and welcome to Linux to the Rest of Us, episode 121. It's a show about Linux, all sorts of Linux-related topics, hardware, software, whatever we deem necessary to bring to you and we like at the moment, we are doing it. I am your host, Cody Cooper, but I am joined by a much more important individual, the Linux Maven, Door-to-Door Geek, a.k.a. Steve McLaughlin. How's it going, Door?
Going pretty good. Just a busy week. I did had a lot of conversations with John Miller in Podnuts. We're trying to get this audio editing virtual machine done right. I'll say that. John's put I can't even count the hours into trying to get this thing running right. Because I'm going to quickly harken back to my programming days. The more time I have to invest into something, the easier it should be for an end user. I.e., if I whip something together in a couple minutes, it's going to be really hard for the end user to use, typically. John's put in a lot of time, whole lot of time. I'm putting in time when I can to try to get this thing done right, and I gotta say, we're there. We're right there. We have all the audio stuff figured out. Now we have to figure out how to accurately and correctly do the data. How we share the data out to everybody and how we get the data back from everybody. We're like 80%+ of the way there. So I really do look forward this week to having it done. I'm going to start doing a couple of screencasts tonight, and it's going to be shared to a Podnuts audio editing community. And we're going to see if we can get them slowly into the fold of helping out. They said they wanted to help out, so this was one way I saw I would be definitely helped out.
And for those of you who might be skipping around your episodes and not have an idea whatsoever on what we're talking about, Dore and John Miller have created a virtual machine preloaded with the tools with which to have people help us with audio editing the shows. Now that Dore has been instrumental in reviving some of the older shows and we're pumping out more episodes on a frequent basis, we are looking for individuals that have audio editing experience or people that we know or trust that would be willing to try. But we would rather have an environment to put them in that is consistent and that we could at least answer questions on. And I got to tell you, I've already booted up three iterations of it, and it is getting better every single time. And thank you, John and Dore, for all your hard work. And I'm glad to hear that it's darn near close to being complete, but already paying off.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I can tell you, I've learned a whole bunch already. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to speak for John, but he's inadvertently, I think, taught me a lot of stuff about versioning, differences between Debian and Ubuntu. He's taught me about file sharing in OwnCloud. He reminded me there was such a thing as WebDAV to connect, because I kind of forgot that. Because, you know, that requires work, and I kind of forgot about that. And more than a couple of other things, I'll just say that. So I really do want to thank him immensely. He's definitely helping the overall stress level, I'll say.
And I thank you, too. Anything we can do to lighten Dore's load will be much appreciated, especially in the coming days where the network is being resurrected and reborn and many, many wonderful new horizons on the way. Real quick, before we move on, I do want to talk about something very near and dear to us, which is, of course, our Amazon link. If you are planning on doing any shopping, don't go to Amazon.com. Go to podnuts.com/Amazon. It will literally take you straight to Amazon. You will see no difference whatsoever. However, by using that link, we will get a small commission from any of the purchases that you were already planning on making anyway. So you'll be buying the stuff you wanted to buy anyhow, and you'll be helping on the network. So we really do appreciate it. Personally, I just have a little Amazon icon link in my Chrome taskbar right beneath my URL bar. Right, and whenever I boot up Chrome, I just click that. It takes me right to podnuts.com/Amazon, and then I'm just shopping away. So try that yourself. There are some alternatives that we're working on to make it even easier, but in the meantime, please use podnuts.com/Amazon for all your Amazon purchases. We appreciate it.
Yeah, they're definitely good people. And I did see a Google Plus posting last week. I'm going to throw this out there because I don't know how accurate it was. He had an envelope, and he opened up the envelope, and inside the envelope was a bare motherboard that was dusty. And he kept trying to say he bought it from Amazon. And I kept asking him, did you buy it from Amazon or an Amazon affiliate? I don't see Amazon ever selling used goods, ever. I see them having affiliates selling used goods. And I will say, from what I gathered, basically once he contacted them, they, at least from the last I heard over the phone, said everything will be taken care of.
Yeah, it must have been from like one of the third-party sellers, because the they sell all brand new products. I bought some refurbished stuff from them, like my Logitech, my webcam I'm using right now, the DV9000, or not DV9000, I can't even remember the name of it. Yeah, but it was refurbished. It was basically just a plain cardboard box, but it was like $30 cheaper. So it's like, why not? But I got to tell you, I've heard mainly good things about their customer service. I've only had one issue with them in the many years I've been shopping with them, and it was a component for a customer. And after talking with them for a few minutes, they said they were going to overnight me a replacement, and that I could, and that they will credit me the amount to ship them the defective one back. So really, really took care of me in that instance. So if you are having any trouble, which you probably aren't, rest assured that I'm sure they'll take care of you.
Yeah, I never had an issue with anything from there. I'll say I was always very exact in reading before I did any of my purchases. I know my wife had an issue, and she was flipping out. And then I said, well, have you contacted him yet? And she was like, oh, I am, and I'm going to give him peace of my mind. So I just went to the receipt that in her email, clicked the link, dialed the number, gave her the phone. And I swear, 4 minutes later, she was off the phone and said, yeah, they better fix that stuff. I was like, so they're going to take care of you? Yeah. Well, and then she explained to me what happened. She purchased a Kindle book and said after she had it downloaded on her device, she realized it was the wrong version of the book she bought.
Oh, okay.
I was like, so why were you freaking out? well, so I was just like, well, you know, read the description. That's what descriptions are there for.
Yep.
So yeah, took her a second, but she got it.
So she felt bamboozled, but in the end it was all okay.
Yeah, but in secretly she's still bamboozled because it's Kindle books and you don't actually own a Kindle book.
You own a license to read the book, as long as Amazon wants you to read the book.
I know, and that's the, well, I'll say, I like the idea of Zappos a lot. That's that shoe thing where she does the shoe thing. She gets, you know, two or three pairs every month or so shipped here, and then she sends, you know, two back. Top-notch service there. Regular Amazon, she's really happy with that, too. The only thing I don't like is their Kindle stuff, and that's just because of the license, so I don't participate in that part of Amazon, and I'm okay with that.
Yep. Once again, a couple episodes ago when we were talking to Kevin O'Brien, you really have to know that you're speaking with your wallet when it comes to you buying products or content. So it's your own personal responsibility as a consumer to know where that money's going and investigate it and then put your money where you want, in the hands of who you want.
Right.
Very good.
Yeah, and I have no basic this week, which I think I might have already said. Well, I don't have a basic this week because me and Cody have been kind of busy.
We have. In fact, on the fly, I'll inject a basic. Support those who support you, which, of course, I'm stealing from Dor, but he doesn't care. Jonathan Nato, who was on last week, spoke about a campaign through what service again, Dor? I forget.
Indiegogo.
Yes. He's trying to raise money for his sonar project. And he, obviously, since Google Plus isn't 100% accessible to him, he's really, really trying to get people to help him spread the word. So I know Dor and I both have committed to helping him spread the word. I'm going to post something again tonight. Feel free to follow me on Google Plus or Door if you're not already, and repost, follow, and plus anything to do with that campaign if you want to support Jonathan and his goal that he's trying to get in order to further help the development of his Sonar product, which of course is a fully accessible Linux distro based on Ubuntu. And I believe he also has a full-on Debian spin as well. But he needs some help. He needs help from us. He's done great things for the community. And if you see fit, we'd really appreciate the help. If not from a monetary donation, at least helping him advertise it on Google Plus, which is something that he has asked for and that he really needs. We would appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll just say, he's just a flat-out good guy.
He's a good guy. He's definitely a good guy. And he got me the two of them, Dor and him both, got me super jazzed last week with two words. I'm not even going to say them, because if I say them right now, that's all I'm going to think about the rest of the show.
We'll hold that off.
Yeah, we will. We will. Listen to episode 120 if you don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Okay, first actual link in the show. I honestly thought I might have said this site months and months and months ago. But I will say, I like it because I've been revisiting it a couple times here and there, partially because I like the cleanliness of the site. Okay, and the site is called learncodethehardway.org. Very simple site, very plain site, very easy to navigate site. We are up on the top right hand. There's a couple links. Home, Python, Ruby, C, SQL, regex, and then blog. I gotta say, for those things right there, I've looked at the SQL because that's my technical title at work, and I've looked at that and I've learned a couple things at the same time looking at stuff I already know. I sent the Ruby link to a buddy that I know, and he said very good stuff. He bookmarked it for himself. But up on the top, for some reason, there's no link to the one I like, which is CLI, or Command Line Interface, and that link is cli.learncodethehardway.org. This is basically a command line crash course, as he calls it. And there is a $6 online video plus PDF course you can take if you want to support him. I'm not going to lie, if I had right now $7 in my account this last week, I would have done it just to support him because I want to see him take this a little bit further and deeper. This is great for someone in the, let's say, newborn to toddler years of command line stuff. And even if you're not sure about your age, go to cli.learncodethehardway.org and look for yourself. Really good descriptions of a lot of commands. PWD, hostname, make directory, change directory, ls, make directory, copy, move, cat, rm, find commands, help commands. Whole bunch of good stuff that I really do like how they are verbing it and displaying it and showing it. Very color-coded and pretty and easy to see kind of thing. So I'm definitely liking this a lot.
Yeah, anything to just make learning any sort of programming language that much easier is going to be great. But yeah, I'm looking at this command line crash course. And yeah, for $6, I mean... That's like nothing. That's a great deal.
I like it a lot. Now, I will say, if you click on the video and PDF for $6, you're going to see a Mac window in his screenshot. Understand, Mac is based off of BSD, which is very Unix-like. Linux is very Unix-like. If you can get around on the Linux command line, you can get around on the Mac command line and vice versa. So there's a lot of similarity between the two.
Very cool.
Yeah. I thought that was good, good stuff.
Yep. Anything that makes something as complicated as that more digestible and more accessible. Because I mean, for instance, a couple months ago, I had the whim. I was like, man, I'm going to learn how to program games, and I was looking at some, you know, C++ books and C books, and just for the decent books that are getting like good reviews on Amazon, you're looking at like $50 to $70.
Yeah.
So, yeah, to have an alternative like this, I'm totally digging it. So yeah, if you guys are looking for something like that, check it out.
Yeah, it's very good stuff. And there's plenty of others out there. One site I was going to throw out there really quick, undocumented, is yolinux.com. There's more than a couple command line tutorials there as well. There's a whole lot of more other stuff there as well. That's kind of became my like all-in-one site for generic learning with Linux. I learned that one from Knucklehead Tech at least a year ago. And it's just good, pretty good stuff. And I definitely like the mascot image at the top.
Oh, yeah. If there was ever a laid-back penguin, that is him right there.
Yeah.
That's very cool.
Very good stuff. I honestly, for a while there, was bringing up a lot of Lifehacker articles.
Mm-hmm.
And I think whoever did a lot of their Linux stuff took a break or was told to do something else or something. But I got to say, I found it, in my eyes, a fantastically needed article, I'll say. This is for everybody who purchased a Raspberry Pi and got it and like, and was like overwhelmed what to do with it. It's an article on Lifehacker called A Beginner's Guide to DIYing with the Raspberry Pi. It's under their how to section. And I gotta say, this guy literally leads you by your hand, step by step by step by step, everything you need to get your Pi up and running. And then I believe it gives you a couple examples of what you can do with it.
Yeah, Adam Dawkus is the guy who wrote this, and I've read many of his tech articles. Lifehacker is one of my favorite sites, not just for tech stuff, but they have all sorts of cool things on there all the time, little mind hacks and projects, I mean, of all kinds, tech, gardening, food, home improvement, all this stuff. But yeah, I've read quite a few of his stuff, and I'm looking at this. And yeah, it breaks down what the Pi is. And then one of the things I think that a lot of people can miss out on unless they do a little bit of research, but exactly what components you need to get it up and running. Because for those of you who don't know, the Raspberry Pi, it's literally just a bare board. You have no power supply. You have no cables that come with it, depending on if you buy a package from either Element 14 or Newark. But it lays exactly what you would need to get it up and running. And if you don't know that, then this is a great article. But if you're going even further, it also gives you some great, like how to prepare your SD card, how to do it from all three major operating systems.
Yeah,
this is great. And I'm actually, and I gotta tell you, and I'll talk a little bit more about this later in the show too, but with tax season coming up, if you're getting a little bit of money back or a lot of money back, who knows? You might have that tech purchase that you wanted to make if you're looking at getting a Pi. I think this would be a great article. Or if you already have one and you're just not sure what to do with it, or if you do have one and you don't think you're using it to its potential, this would be a great article to have in order to really squeeze all the juice you can out of this thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a second Lifehacker article, in that article. And it's how to build a XBMC-powered media center in 30 minutes. And I got to say, learning what you learned from the previous post, having the hardware you have from your previous post, they're very honest. You can literally do it in 30 minutes.
So making the XBMC with the Pi?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, very cool.
It's basically a pre-baked Debian Raspberry Pi XBMC distribution created. So you basically just got to take it, flash it onto the SD card, boot it up, and set, I believe, a couple defaults, not many.
Very cool. Yeah, I've actually never set up an XBMC media center in my home at all, and I'm looking at picking up at least one Pi. So I'm looking, well, much like you do, and that you've suggested in the past, you know, you need that spousal approval if you're to bring in like a new media device into the home. And from the screenshots and the testimonials of people who have used XBMC before, it just looks like it's really, really fluid, and be able to use it on a lower powered device like this and have it produce good results is going to be huge, especially in my house. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, definitely. And I'll say, in my experience, the controller interface you use for that is going to weigh heavily on its success or failure.
Mm-hmm.
Just like just like with your Roku, if they made that remote differently, it could have been a miserable failure.
Right.
You know what I mean?
No, the Roku remote is really good. The Boxy remote, in my opinion, is one of the best on the market, but unfortunately, their devices have seen some some turbulent times in the past year or so. But don't you own a wireless, a Bluetooth, like a keyboard touchpad thing, or am I thinking of someone else?
I do, but I believe it's specifically geared, engineered for my hardware. I have a Melee, M-E-L-E, A1000 box, and what I got was called a Melee Fly Sky Air Mouse.
Okay.
Which is very Boxy box-like. Keyboard on one side, flip it over, directional pad, and Air Mouse on the other side, where you can just, like the Nintendo Wii, wave it around.
Oh, there you go.
And it moves the mouse around.
And I gotta tell you, if you guys are looking for a remote like that, definitely try to get one with a QWERTY keyboard. It might cost a little bit more, and you'll probably be asking yourself, I don't need a QWERTY keyboard.
Whatever.
But when you start going and searching for content quite a bit, and you're typing in those words, if you're doing it scrolling left for 5 seconds to hit the letter and then click and then scrolling left and then scrolling right, you're going to want a QWERTY keyboard. So take my word for it. Get one with a QWERTY keyboard. Don't ever buy a phone with a QWERTY keyboard. If you have a phone with a QWERTY keyboard, you're not in the present, you're in the past. You're not even listening to the show. So,
right, and you're paying too much, because you're literally paying extra money for that hardware keyboard.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. This next one, I really question whether or not I was going to bring up. It's only because I'm becoming more demanding as time goes on. Whenever I see an article saying Ubuntu powered tablet dual boots with Android, this tablet is called a Nibbo and. I-B-B-I-O.
Nibbio?
It's over at Nibbio, yeah. It's over at MucketWare.com. It's to be a really good site. Sorry. Here's to me the big kicker. I'm sick and tired of people saying dual booting without giving explicit details, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Every device I've bought, like my Melee A1000, my MK802, all these devices, they all claim to be dual booting. Well, they're not really dual booting. That's like saying sticking a CD in your computer and booting to that makes it a dual boot computer.
Right.
It isn't dual boot. That's like a extra boot. Alternative, it's not a native boot. Okay. Every Ubuntu tablet, in air quotes, that I've seen boot from Ubuntu on an SD card. SD cards in all these devices seem to be extremely lackluster and very, very, very slow, which in my experience makes the Ubuntu experience, dare I say, horrible, sucky, bad. This thing says the tablet will feature a dual boot system with Android 4.0 installed alongside Ubuntu 12. Well, there is no Ubuntu 12. It's either 12.04 or 12.10, but why get petty about the details? I, to be quite frankly honest, do not believe any of these things anymore when they say dual boot until I hear an in-depth review. But with that said, the device seems decent. Wi-Fi or 3G It's going to be a 10-inch tablet. It's going to have a 1.4 Samsung Exynos, which is the right now one of the better processors, 2 gigabytes of DDR3 RAM, and 32 gigs of internal storage. That, to me, is a pretty fair... it was a quad-core processor. Those, to me, are very fair tablet specs in today's market, which is usually not the case. When you hear something can run Android or Ubuntu, it seems like most of the time the hardware kind of lacks. Mm-hmm. And this one seems like it's actually being respectable.
Yeah, those Samsung processors are very powerful. To have a quad-core option for something like this would be very cool. And even... things we've read about the Ubuntu Phone OS, it's running on a Galaxy Nexus, which is only a dual-core processor. So,
right.
Yeah, if it's running it natively on the device and it's able to also boot into Android, that's one thing. But you're right to just say, I mean, you know, you could say, well, I can run whatever OS on it. Well, are you doing it natively? Is it through an SD card? Is it off a USB drive? What? How is it getting booted? Because you could say you can run it all day long, but unless it's utilizing the hardware in such a way where it's going to be a worthwhile experience, why even do it?
Yeah. Interesting, hopefully competitive tablet on some market, but I'm not going to believe it runs Ubuntu or any Linux natively until I hear somebody credible saying it's installed in the internal space, taking advantage of all the internal speed on the hardware. That'll be nice. Pleasant change of pace, I'll say.
So if you guys want to help us with a hardware review, definitely go pick one up and let us know.
Oh, that'd be really cool.
Yep, just search for Nibbio tablet. This N-I-B-B-I-O tablet. It's on muckedware.com is the article we're referencing, and it'll be in the show notes, so check it out.
Yeah. Okay, this next one I wanted to bring up, but I didn't want to sound uncommonly biased because I'm uncommonly biased. Yeah, I have no problem admitting that, okay? Windows 8. Oh, God, it's horrible. I had another coworker today. I heard... ask another coworker for a Windows 7 disk. I didn't say nothing. Didn't say a word. Later this evening, he Google talked to me and said, "Do you have any idea why I'm having an issue installing Windows 7 on this laptop?" I said, "What did the laptop come with?" He said, something like a power cord. No. What came installed on the laptop? He said, "Oh, Windows 8. I just immediately threw my hands up and said, "Well, you might as well take it back." He said, "Why? What are you talking about?" I've heard a lot of horror stories of people trying to reverse load Windows 7 on a Windows 8 piece of hardware themselves and had nothing but problems doing it. Which I'll say, I now believe is by design. I'm starting to believe they're purposely making this new hardware not compliant with standard retail Windows 7 install media to force you to use Windows 8 because they want you to use Windows 8. It's that kind of venom I'm getting from Windows users about Windows 8. I'm not perpetuating it. They're coming to me saying it sucks. I can't use it anymore. I need to have Windows 7 back. That kind of venom coming from normal people who always use Windows, makes me believe this article on ZDNet from Stephen J. Von Nichols, who I had to say that because it's a KPO, Colonel Panicog cast rite of passage, I guess. Now I have credibility in their eyes because I said his name. Amazon, okay? The company that when they're down, every minute they're down, they lose something like $6 million, something insane, okay?
Yep.
Amazon. The company of online purchases, Amazon's top-selling laptop does not run Windows, does not run Mac, it runs Chrome OS.
That's right.
Okay? Their number one hottest-selling, most-selling, for like that week, I want to say it was a Chromebook. That, to me, is very telling, I'll say. And it was a more expensive Samsung Chromebook, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, just because it was... well, and here's the thing, too, is that if I'm correct, that was also in shorter supply. So people were jumping on that one. I mean, huge. And... In when we initially talked about it before our full review, after looking at the specs really quick and just kind of weighing it, you know, without really, really thinking about it a lot, I was 100% sure I was going to buy a Samsung one. But then after really, really considering it, I wanted to go with the Acer instead. Now that's not to say that the Samsung isn't a great one. It's a little more expensive. It's runs on an ARM processor, okay? It's a nice case. It runs an SSD. It's super snappy, much better battery life, yada, yada, yada. But I really, really loved this article, and I've read several about it, too. And one of my favorite things, too, is that it just takes those naysayers and just shuts them up. Because you had so many people in the onset going, well, who's going to want to use something like this? You know, it's not going to bring on the death of the PC, long live laptops, you know, tablets. But if you guys haven't listened to our review of our Chromebooks, it's my daily carry now. I use my Chromebook every single day. Now, it doesn't get everything I need done, but it's going to play to many, many different demographics, not just people who need a low-powered device, but you're talking, I mean, just a huge, wide variety of people. So I don't doubt it for a second that it was their best-selling laptop or computer product that week or for many weeks to come.
Yeah, and I mean, it goes to show people do want less expensive goods. Yes, there are people out there that want the $2,000 MacBooks, too. Saying, of course there is. That's why they sell. I will say, I'm still not sure, positive, beyond a shadow of a doubt, this Chromebook is for even a close to a majority of households good enough to be their only computer. I'll say it's a fair percentage of houses that's plenty good enough to be their only computer. And for every house, it's perfectly acceptable as a secondary computer. And if it's number one selling on Amazon, that I'm sure is like figuratively punching someone in the face saying we have to do something. There's obviously a market here that we need to do something with.
Most definitely. And yeah, I mean, if you think of what does the basic user do? You know, they surf the web, they check email, they listen to music, they watch videos. Those are all things that can be taken care of by Chrome OS on this lower-powered hardware. They're not, you know, snail slow here. They run just great, and they're built specifically for it. So, yeah, I love mine, and, yeah, I could definitely see it being a primary device, and especially that forthcoming Chrome box. Like, I'm thinking of buying my dad one, just because he has a single core, like a first gen Mac Mini. That's just like it basically Apple's left him behind. He can't do updates on his Firefox anymore because it won't run in his current hardware. He's losing support for all of these pieces of software that he needs. So if you guys have ever been thinking about buying one, like I said, tax season's coming up. You want to jump on it. And I don't know if you mentioned this store because I stepped out for a moment, but HP and I think Lenovo both announced this week that they're coming out with Chromebooks as well. I know HP for sure. I'm pretty sure Lenovo was one of them. So, yeah. And those are big names in this space. So to see those companies also latch on top of Acer and Samsung, I mean, you're talking some big, big players realizing that this is a huge, viable platform. And I'm sure we're only going to see more Chromebooks and Chrome OS devices in the future.
Right. Well, for some godforsaken reason, I got kicked out of my Google Docs yet again. I don't know what's going on here, but it keeps doing that. Okay, there's a link that I got to put here in the chat right before this one. It's a link to a Google Plus posting by Francis Belfort, January 16. It basically looks like this is really going to come to fruition. At least the Acer, at least it looks like Acer is going to come out with one. It's a It is the official, like, Chrome box of desktop-esque computer, 500 gigabytes of RAM. I'm sorry, 500 gigabytes of SATA hard drive, 2 gigabytes of RAM, 2.7 gigahertz processor, which is plenty for Chrome.
Oh, yeah.
And I really don't even doubt at all. So hackable. Oh, hackable.
Oh, yeah. Well, and another thing I'm noticing here too, whenever you think about buying a laptop, I mean, you know, they'll say the specific drive they have in there, but they almost never go to the point of saying what manufacturer the drive is. This explicitly says that it will be a Western Digital Caviar Blue, which there, right. First of all, Western Digital, in my eyes, definitely top two or top three hard drive manufacturers, period. But their Caviar series are amazing. Blue isn't their high-end, but it's just below their high-end. And to have it in a device like this, yeah, that's going to be... It's just that much more of a good purchase decision based on the value that you're getting, the value buy from having that component in that device. Does it specify a price whatsoever? I'm not seeing anything that would indicate that.
Okay. I just hear rumored retailing as little as $99.
Oh, jeez.
They would literally have to beat people away with a spiked stick that's on fire.
Yep.
For only $99.
Yep.
And it makes sense. It doesn't need a screen. You know, and I know, the price of that Acer Chromebook we got, an okay amount of money had to go towards that screen.
That's right. Yep. That, and that there's so many other considerations with having a mobile device versus having a little box like this to attach all of your other external components to it. So,
right. Yeah, so I just wanted to throw that in there. The next one to talk about, just super quick, this is basically like the Pwn2Own competition, but it's called Pwnium 3 competition. I've never heard of this competition before. But the article does say on TechCrunch, oh, you don't know why I'm using TechCrunch, says it is a Pwn2Own like security conference where basically Google is putting up Chrome OS saying, go ahead, hack it. They have 3.14159 in prize money, which now I'm going to guess this contest is on March 14th because that's Pi, and yep, their prize is 3.141. Man, I'm so happy Steve isn't here because he would have really hit me for not noticing that earlier. Oh, until yeah, March the 7th. So that, I don't know. Maybe they're giving out the prize money on the 14th. I don't know. But if you can hack and you don't want to work and you don't want to go to jail, then you need to get yourself to Vancouver, British Columbia on March 7th. Hack a Chromebook, get some money. It's just that easy, right? It's just that easy.
It is. I mean, you're talking, ever over $3.14 million in prizes that are handing out. There will be two reward levels in this year's competition. $110,000, browser or system level compromise in guest mode or as a logged in user delivered via a web page. Or $150,000, compromise with device persistence, guest-to-guest with interim reboot delivered via a web page. I love to see the company who owns the product actually put up the money and say, you know what, we want to see what you guys can do to it. Because it's one thing for instance, a competitor to offer the money, like if it was, you know, this is just an example, you know, HP offering like a bounty on like the new MacBook Pro or something, right? But to see it come directly from Google or directly from the manufacturer of the device, I think that's very cool. And of course, it's just going to make it stronger because, you know, they're going to reward the price money and go, by the way, hey, you want a job? More than likely, you know, so very, very cool.
Right. Yeah, and as far as I'm concerned, Chrome is still amongst the safest browsers. Let me rephrase it. Safest full-featured browsers, because with the full-featuredness, there's a lot of security risk right there.
Mm.
I feel very safe on Chrome as in regards to exploits. I understand people who say they do not like Chrome because of the privacy issue. Privacy and security are, in fact, two completely different things. Let's not confuse the two when I say I like Chrome for security. Notice the fingers are apart because they're different.
For yes.
The video people. Yes. They're different.
An analogy by a wise man about an unbendable pole comes to mind.
Yeah. Mr. Gibson, who is very smart and a little scary at the same time. Security and convenience are on opposite ends of an unbendable pole, and the two shall never meet. And I believe that's a very true statement. Oh, super stupid quick there, okay? Okay, now that you said his name, and we were just talking about Google, I'm going to throw this link in when I get a chance. What I'm holding in front of the camera now is a Yubico YubiKey. If you listen to Gibson, you already know about this. If you don't listen to Gibson, you're like, what the hell is that? Okay. What this is, it is, when it was originally made, very small, now just small, USB device. That is, okay, now everybody knows USB is a rectangle where half of the rectangle is hollow on the connector. Well, this is just the part that's not hollow. So you shove this into your computer. What it is basically a quote-unquote dumb chip. Okay, you can plug it into any Windows computer with any permissions set. It registers as a human interface device, which means if you have no access on that computer at all and you unplug the keyboard and plug it back in, human interfaces devices still have the ability to install, i.e., you can slap this into any computer with any access and it will register as a keyboard. And it has a little touch-sensitive button on it. Touch it once or touch it and hold it, and it can do two different things. One is a hard preset password. The other one is a pre-generated pattern of passwords, what Gibson calls the perfect paper passwords. Google knows one of the biggest issues right now with security is passwords and people's weak passwords and people reusing passwords. There's a very easy way to get around that, and that is they're working with the company Yubico at taking this device, shrinking it down even more, having it on a keychain, on a charm, in a ring, where that will be your authentication token to log in to Google. In actuality, it'll be part of a two-factor authentication, which I gotta say, I like a hell of a lot. Here's kind of what I don't like about it. Okay? Google wants to own your identification onto the internet. Okay? Which also means they basically want you to only have one ID on the internet. Okay? If you have this on your ring, you have one ID on your internet. And that's it. And that's what Google likes. So what you might have down the road is one super secure login and then your other quote unquote normal logins. This can be very game changing as far as internet security goes. Like I said, security and convenience on the opposite end of a pole that do not match. This is secure and it's convenient.
Mm-hmm.
There are always anomalies in the universe that cannot be explained. This is such a anomaly. Okay. Its basic design is very safe, very secure. Everyone who I've ever seen taken a look at it say, you know, the way it's designed, the way it's implemented, the way it's used, it is a very safe device. Of course, nothing is perfect. because if you're stupid, you're going to lose this, or you're going to put it in a computer that's infected, and who knows what will happen when there's key loggers on. But the device itself is built very good. Someone with, I'm trying to think of the right word, someone with such a benefit to gain, like Google, on being able to be really confident that that person who's logging in is in fact that person who's logging in, and having it very convenient for me to say, why, yes, it is me, only benefits Google immensely. Immensely. And it does benefit us. Look forward this year sometime. Don't be shocked if you go into Walmart, Target, Highs, 7-Eleven, whatever, and you see behind the counter you can buy yourself a Google authentication ring. Because you bring it home, you register it, you affix it to your account, you get a text on your phone, so then you have your phone, your web browser, and your Google token all in a quote-unquote circle of trust, to where people like PayPal might really have to start to worry here soon, is all I want to say.
I don't know how I feel about that. I'll have to research it a bit more. But you know, that might be a great device or topic for an upcoming thing we have in the works. I think that would be great.
Yeah. Well, and I'll say super quick, my job hated that device for a couple of reasons. When I would put the device in new mode and set my new password with it, they would freak out. They would freak out and try to tell me how it wasn't safe. But then they would get really mad when it would put in a password that was so long, it would remind them that my password was not Windows 2000 compliant. To which I had to turn to them and say, get Windows 2000 off this domain. Okay?
Because the password is too big?
Yeah, when the password's more than, I think, 15 characters long, on Active Directory domain that supports Windows 2000 computers, you will get a warning message. It will still work, but you'll get a warning message. And, you know, domain admins, where I'm at, have, like, you know, 10-character passwords, God forbid. So, of course, me, my 17-character password causes issues. Sorry I'm safe, guys.
Right.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Okay, now, I had to ask you super quick, Cody.
Sure.
Are you still running stock Chrome OS on your Chromebook?
I am. I have yet to dip my toe. I thought about putting Kubuntu on it, but I still plan on it just because I want the experience, but at the moment, with how stretched thin I am with my work schedule, I already have a laptop with Ubuntu on it. Gotcha. So I haven't felt the absolute need. Not that I don't want to throw it on there just to see its performance, because you've spoken to it very highly. But no, I haven't done this. I removed the warranty sticker within seconds of taking the thing out of the box just to have that street cred. But yes. No, haven't done anything else to it. No. Why do you ask?
Good man. Well, okay. Two reasons. One, nobody seems to research first. Two, I didn't know either until I went and dove into it. So I'm just as guilty as those other people, okay?
Okay.
You cannot just throw right now, quote-unquote, any Linux you want on the Chromebook. And there's really not a super good reason for it, I'll say that, okay? First off, I think we might have mentioned with Jonathan, we might have had to skip it, Core Boot.
Mm-hmm.
Did you mention Core Boot?
Yes, we did.
Okay. The Chromebook is using Core Boot. It's not a standard BIOS. It's not a standard bootloader process, number one. Which means you technically cannot go through the normal install process with a Linux distribution. That's the impression I get.
Okay.
Okay. For me to install Krubuntu, C-R-U-B-U-N-T-U, Krubuntu, whatever, on the Chromebook, I had to reboot it, put it into developer mode, that automatically reset the device, reboot it again when it's sitting at the first time screen, connect to a network, and then Control-Alt, and I think it was number 1 or number 2, to switch desktops, and it switched to a desktop with a command shell on it. It's basically a hidden thing. You're not supposed to know about it. Oh, it's a hidden secret.
Mm.
Had to go there, type a wget command to pull down a script file. Run the script file. The script file downloads something like 10 parts of the, not even the install, okay? It pulls down 10 parts. Some of them are complete partitions, okay? There's a lot of things going on during this install that I'm not fully aware of, but I will say this. It appears like it is still using the same genuine Linux kernel that Chrome OS goes with, but it puts in other folders these parts of Ubuntu, okay? And I'm sure it does some fancy FS tab mounting during boot. I'll throw that in there right now. Then when it's all done, you have to basically run another command to modify the bootloader so it boots into Crubuntu, C-H-R-U-B-U-N-T-U, and doesn't boot into Chrome OS. Okay, with that said, so you have to use a custom installer to do a custom way of installing. If there is no Fedora installer, I don't think you're going to get Fedora on this unless you're going to develop the installer. Or you're going to do what is closer to being like almost a Gentoo hands-on bare metal install, which if you can do that, more power to you, sir. Now, say, the last part I said, you have to put in a command to modify the bootloader so you boot into the Ubuntu environment. Technically speaking, this is still a dual boot device. I can, when I'm in Ubuntu, issue another command. It will change me from booting into partition 5 into partition 0. Then when I reboot, I'm going to be in Chrome OS. I haven't done that, but I know I can switch back and forth. What I don't know is if I log into Chrome OS, is it going to in any way change the Ubuntu around. I'm going to leave it Ubuntu probably until after NELF. Then I'm going to flash it back to Chrome OS and probably stick with that for now.
So here's my question for you based on what you know, because I remember doing a little bit of research on the CR48 when it first came out and was in its beta testing program, which you got one. Now, is all of this sort of locked down as far as installing other Linux distros on it? Is that specifically limited to having the original drive with Chrome OS on it?
Yes.
So, yes. So, is core boot, is it like BIOS related to where, because what I'm thinking of doing, and because I just got a nice new drive freed up out of a dead laptop of mine, taking the hard drive out of my Chromebook, slapping that in there, and starting to do some testing that way. But my main concern with that, which you may just be trying to bring up here with, if for some reason your Chrome OS install becomes corrupted or whatever, isn't there a chip on the board which reinstalls it? Because that's not on the hard drive, right?
That's what I read. That's what I'm led to believe. I don't have a separate drive. If I did have a separate drive, I would literally blank that drive so there's nothing on it.
Yep.
Slap it into the Chromebook. I'm willing to bet a bacon and pancake lunch.
Okay.
That you boot it up and it's going to immediately flash and say the system needs to rebuilt to be rebuilt. Right. Press the space bar to continue, and then bang, you're back on normal Chrome OS. I'm willing to bet at least 3 lunches. I'll say that's going to happen. If it doesn't happen, there are ways to install Chrome OS on a Chromebook. It looks like you have to download what is essentially a image file, put it on the hard drive, put the hard drive back in, and you can go. But in your case, because you have a functioning drive, I say if it doesn't work, worst case scenario, you can use something like Gparted even, Clonezilla, something like that, and literally just clone the original drive to your new drive. And I am willing to bet another couple lunches that would work just fine.
It's 5 lunches, Tor.
I'm Well, for me, that's only 2 days worth of food, but that's game. I am definitely game for that.
Okay. Well, I'll contemplate that and maybe take you up. But regardless, yeah, the drive that comes stock, of course, the Acer Chromebook is a 320 gig 5400 RPM drive, where I have a Western Digital Caviar Black drive, which is a 7200 RPM 500 gig drive. So even if I'm just going to go the clone route, like what you suggested, it'll be a faster drive. Now, what that's going to do to battery performance, I don't know. It should definitely heighten the performance, so if I'm throwing Kubuntu on it. So we'll see. As a matter of fact, that's what I think I'll do, because that way the stock drive is 100% safe. I know it's going to be 100% safe anyway with all the things you can do, but
right.
It'll give me I haven't used Clonezilla in these 2 years, so it'll give me an excuse to do that, to throw something different on the Chromebook. So look out for that in the near future. I'll commit to doing that in the next couple weeks, tops.
Very cool. And I will throw out there, I'm 99.999% sure, yet again, there's a part in Gparted I never knew existed, to where you can copy partitions. I want to say, just for myself, I want to check that out, because if I did hear right about that, that is really cool. That would be the, how can I put it, like the poor man's Clonezilla. If you can literally just right-click, and yeah, there is a copy-paste when I click on partition. They can't be mounted. That's the only gimmick. Neither of them can be mounted, but you can right-click, copy. Go to another drive, paste.
And by poor man's, you can do that or cannot?
It looks like you can, but they both cannot be mounted, but they have to both be connected at the same time.
Okay.
So you'd have to literally have both drives connected to another computer, and you literally just right-click the partition, hit copy, go to the new place, right-click, and hit paste in Gparted.
Now I have an excuse to go buy another one of these little toaster dock things.
There you go. I'm glad I could help.
Yep. Hey, anything you can do to help me justify buying more tech toys, I'm all for it. I might even meet Martin up at Fry's and pick one up in person soon, Martin. Check out, cool. Yeah, look out for that message. We'll figure something out.
Very cool. Honestly, I'm not sure. Did you put this next note in, or did I put it in and not realize I put it in?
For the How One Man?
Yes.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
Oh, good, because I'm starting to think maybe I did drink too much last weekend.
You know what, and this has to do with something I asked for from our listeners on one of my first shows when I took over the hosting duties, but involving children with technology. And we've got, I mean, every week it seems like we get some really, really great responses, because people are still listening to the older episodes, or at least thinking, oh yeah, I have this one thing. And I got this awesome article about, and I can't remember who it was from, because I just posted in our show notes, but I will give you credit later, I promise. He sent us an article about how he introduced his 5-year-old and 2-year-old daughters to StartX and XMonad. That's 5 and 2-year-old children.
Very cool.
Yes. And they're having a blast with it. Or no, excuse me, they're not daughters. I'm not gonna mix up genders like I have in the last couple of shows. Yeah, see, it's contagious.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Ash. Appreciate it. but yeah, this article is in the show notes. Literally goes through how he got his kids to basically what I got from reading the article was that he presented it in such an enthusiastic way to where the kids were excited going into it, instead of being sort of sat down, you know, very strict style and saying, hey, we're going to learn these today. So going through the process, the kids are just completely jazzed about it. And the fact that they're learning, and that they know they're learning, they know they're building to their skill set, they're just even that much more happy to be doing it. So I think that definitely plays to a much stronger lesson, is if you make tasks or even technology fun for your kids, then that's just, you know, that's grasping them at such a young age to where they're going to really, really flourish in that field in the future. So really, really dug this article. If you guys have any kids, you're trying to think of a good way to introduce them to tech, or even more, like, I don't know how to use XMonad or StartX. I've never used that. So to think that these kids who I'm outaged multiple times over between the two of them, are doing it and having a blast. I mean, now I'm compelled to go do it.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. This is a long article. I did read a good amount of it. I didn't read it all, but I think I see what they're trying to do. And I got to say, this is where my flaw is with dealing with my own children. I think I do too much of, now wait, don't touch anything, okay? And then try to explain to them what's going on. And roll their eyes.
Right.
Can I get a juice? I got a good potty. Can I have a cookie? Yeah.
It's almost like you let them out on the playground, they start to run around, and you pull them back to the border. You're like, okay, I got to explain how these toys work. Now, there's the big toy. There's the tire swing. Now, you have to use this grip on the chain of the tire swing, you're going to fall.
I know.
Now, here's the slide.
I don't know why I do it.
Yeah. It's trial and error, just like with everything else in parenting. Dora, you've given me some great parenting advice, and I've put most of it to use, and it's worked
flawlessly. Feed them a lot of sugar?
No. The best piece of advice you gave me when it comes to kids is when the kid takes a nap, you take a nap.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my cousin-in-law just had a baby 3 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. I send her like two or three texts a day. When the kid takes a nap, you take a nap. And she and I went over to her house last week, and the kid is asleep. And I turned to her, I say, what are you doing?
Yep.
Well, I'm hanging out and talking to you. No. Have you not listened? I've told you like 80 times. The kid's taking a nap. You take a nap. We'll do housework. We'll do your dishes and stuff, clean up. You take a nap. Yep. Oh, I can't do that. Yes, you can.
Mm-hmm.
Take a nap. This kid's going to kill you.
Yep. Yeah, it goes against your instinct, because you think once you put the kid down, oh, now I got all this time to like do my tasks and do this and get caught up on that.
Sucker.
But no. Shut up.
That's a sucker.
Lay down. Yep, lay down. Best piece of advice I got for parenting, which I relayed to other parents before, and they look at me like I just like pulled a fish out of my mouth.
Yeah.
Just completely crazy.
I hate to say it, but it's like the shell game on the streets back in the day. People would walk by and see this guy with a 3-card Monty kind of thing. That looks easy. What? I can do that.
Yeah.
And not until they lose their wallet do they understand, hey, this guy hustled me. He's good. You know, dude, kids will hustle you into exhaustion before you know it. So take advantage of it before you can, you know, because let me tell you something. I tried to stay up with my oldest when he was first born a little bit. Oh, after 2 days, 3 days, I just fell out. Fell out, and I had him on my chest. And I'm going to, like, I think to myself, if he wakes up in less than an hour, I'm going to, like, feed him something. And that's another parent thing. Food drunk. You've seen food drunk, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah, in fact, I took a cute video of my son. But yeah, just the whole bobbing the head and reaching forward, like grasping for something with which to stay awake, and they just can't do it.
Yep. If you give your kid, quote-unquote, too much food, and at that age, come on, their stomach is like, you know, like teeny. So it's not hard to give them too much food, but if you give them too much food, they literally act like an 80-year-old drunk man, where they can't hold their head up. I mean, they already couldn't talk. Now it's even worse. and it's like if you put something in front of them, they can't even grab it because it's like they're drunk. So that was one thing when I saw my oldest son do that the first time. I had to take a video of that, and I almost peed myself laughing. But then I realized it's food drunk. That's what happens when he thinks he's a dog and eats until he can't eat no more.
That's true.
Yeah. So
it's a real thing. It happens.
Thing. Yeah. That's a funny thing about being a parent, I'll say.
Very cool.
And yes, once in a while I do overfeed my kids just to watch them do that. But, you know, I don't care. Send all hate mail to
Steve.
SMD.
Yeah.
Steve at smdcomputer.net.
Yep. Or send a voicemail into the Unbootables over at the Geeksters.tv network. They will be happy to hear it.
Yep. My real name is Mitch, so you can probably send it to Mitch at Geeksters.tv.
Yep. And my real name is Eric Salce.
Yes. Okay. This next one I had to throw out there, and I'm not going to lie, I did no research into this. Zero research into this. And
zero,
I did.
Nada.
And I'm not going to lie, yes, The first podcast I heard mention about this, yes, Matt, it was Sunday Morning Linux Review. I did bookmark this on a time scale, maybe 20 minutes before that. So I did read about it first, and by read about it, I read the headline. But I heard them talk about it.
I'm sorry, I got to stop you real quick. Is this the Matt that lost a bet to me at OLF and had to pay me $10 cash in front of like 200 or 300 people?
A couple hundred people, yes.
Okay, I was just making sure, just in case he's listening to this, to rub it in a little deeper. Okay, go on.
Right. Okay. One of the hugest failing flaws about Windows is configurations and copying, quote-unquote, configurations. Super quick backstory again. Part of my job was setting up servers, intra and inter public-facing servers, and one of the things I learned very, very quickly was when you get something set up and it passes a security scan, you then have to image the device. And you image the device, so if you have to put out another one, you can take that image, blast it back on new hardware, because that image already passed security. And the reason they make an image is not because it's easy, not because it will work on all hardware, not because it's bulletproof, but because there is no other way in rational usage you can actually completely back up, copy, mirror, or restore a configuration for a complete operating system in Windows. That was a lot. Okay. And what I mean by that is, if you have web servers on there, if you have FTP servers on there, if you have all this other software on there, there's no easy way to take all the configuration for that and the underlying OS on Windows and say, I want that same configuration over here on this Windows server. It just doesn't exist. Okay.
You can't just like drag and drop them. Okay.
Right. So they have you imaging the device because then they know you didn't maybe forget to check a box or you maybe didn't forget to update this. They know it's already done. In Linux world, there's an application called Puppet. Puppet is like a ninja. Puppet has the ability to, among other things, take a current installed box and mirror that to as many boxes as you want. Or it can take 10 boxes and say, oh, this configuration changed, make a log that configuration changed, and now change it back to what it was. It can do a lot of network administration when it comes to configuration on servers. And this configuration can go down to even updating software. Notice I said the word enterprise and big networks here a whole lot. Okay, what happened was the company VMware, which I will say I have very mixed feelings about. Okay, very, very mixed feelings about. VMware as a company pumped $30 million into the people behind Puppet. They're not buying it outright. They're not insisting things change. They're not trying to close source. They basically want to try to make sure VMware and Red Hat Enterprise Linux, which they primarily use on VMware servers, is and Puppet, they work together as best as possible. So I got really excited when I heard this. I like seeing companies reinvest money into the production of Linux software.
That's the only way it's going to get bigger. I mean, the community does a huge job. I mean, does a fantastic job. And we've seen it time and time again, taking failing projects and turning them around, if you look at LibreOffice versus OpenOffice, I mean, what the community did with that in literally the turn of a hat, or on the turn of a dime, was amazing. But with the one more thing that Dora's speaking to here, one of the things that's going to legitimize the platform even more in the eyes of the public is to see big companies like this get behind and pump money into these smaller projects. And I'm very happy to see that as well.
Yeah. Now, I will say it looks like they're basically creating a new project up, and this new project is called Razor. And I will say it is hosted at GitHub. That's a very good start. It says Razor is the next generation provisioning software that handles bare metal hardware and virtual server provisioning. A la Amazon, when you need more resources, you get more resources kind of thing.
Very cool. Very cool. Now,
what I'm trying to figure out is this GPL licensed or MIT licensed or what? And I cannot seem to find that part out. I will say, oh, there you go. There's a file in it called licenses. Puppet Labs is under the Apache license. So it isn't full GPL. I will always accept the Apache license versus a completely closed license. So it's still good in my book. I'll say that.
Awesome.
Very cool. Okay, I got two more that I had to throw in there.
Certainly.
And it's because GNOME sucks.
Whoa. Okay? Hey, watch your mouth.
It's horrible. GNOME Shell, Unity, all these kind of other interfaces are usable to a certain degree, but the lack of control and the lack of accessibility, a.k.a. Jonathan Nadeau, to me says they have real problems. Okay, real problems in how they're doing everything.
Mm-hmm.
GNOME had a thing called fallback mode. Fallback mode was when you did not have proper 3D acceleration on your computer, it would quote unquote fall back to an interface that looked much, much, much more like GNOME 2, old school GNOME. The GNOME whatever board said they're basically going to freeze all development on this. We can't afford to put developers on it, so we're not going to update it again. It's there, but we're not going to update it again. Well, there's two links in here. One is with a interview on linux-updates.org, and it's an interview with Ikey Doherty, who is the guy behind SolusOS. SolusOS, I still believe in my heart of hearts, is a utterly competent distribution to put on a computer, have a lot of fun with, have a lot of stability while you're using it, and have an interface that is not completely foreign or flashy just to be flashy.
Right,
kind
right.
of thing.
Functional, yes. Still with a modern twist. It doesn't look quite like old GNOME 2, but yeah, if you sat anyone that used XP or GNOME 2 in front of it, they would have no problems whatsoever.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, Ikey decided to fork GNOME fallback mode, and he's calling it the consort desktop environment. I cannot tip my hat more, faster, whatever, to Ikey for, to be honest, doing this, because it is needed, okay? GNOME has lost everything. And by that, what I mean is they used to be the number one most installed desktop environment and the number one default desktop environment on Linux distributions. Now, if you look at all the main distributions right now, there's one that ships with GNOME, and that is Fedora. And there's rumors Fedora 19 is going to come with Cinnamon as its default desktop. So
I'm not trying to like prove you wrong here, but this is a legitimate question. Did OpenSUSE change their default DE?
No, their default DE has always been KDE. You can install GNOME from the install media.
Right. Okay. I gotcha.
But even when you go to OpenSUSE.org and look at their main page, it's all KDE screenshots. And I'll say, GNOME has fallen out of graces with a lot of developers and a lot of users. Now, I still think underneath, it is a great desktop environment. It's a great environment to build applications. There's nothing wrong with it per se. It just looks like poo, and it acts like poo, and it assumes too much, and it takes away control a little bit too much. And because of that, distros have been jumping ship. Now, I will say, if Cinnamon gets put on Fedora, that is going to be huge news for Linux Mint. Clem will have a whole new arena of people to supply information back. I want to say this is what I heard on Colonel Panic Allcast. I couldn't agree more. A whole new group of people to supply bug fixes, error reports, and everything else. So that would really make that desktop, in my opinion, much more of a real Linux desktop and not a Linux Mint desktop. Mm-hmm. I hope that the Consort desktop will have some kind of upswing, uptick, some kind of people liking it as well. I'm not sure when it's going to be released, but if you go to solusos.com/blog2013-01 on a blog post entitled "The Consort Desktop Environment," and scroll down, there's 10 or so screenshots. And if you look at these screenshots, the honest-to-goodness thing I want you to realize is when you look at these, it looks like nothing special. To me, it just looks like nothing special. You have application, places, system, a flat, plain-looking list of applications. You have a, you know, down by the time, you have your icons you always see. You can add the panel. Your file browser just looks normal. System monitor just looks normal. Create a launcher looks familiar. Everything just looks normal. That's by design. The last thing he wants people to do is to have any kind of shock when they launch this for the first time.
Yeah, it's a nice, clean-looking interface. And yeah, it's not like you need to sit down with a document to learn how to navigate it. I mean, it's pretty intuitive and easy, yet presented in such a way where it does look very modern and very pleasing on the eyes. And I really do like that color blue. As silly as that sounds, blue, psychologically, it's a calming color. So to see distros use blue, it just kind of, I don't know, makes me tilt my head just to a slight degree and go, this is where I belong.
Right. And I will say, if you scroll down, I think it's fantastic. There's 49 comments. The very first listed comment is, "Why did you do that? I see no reason, because there's already Mate DE, or some people call it Mate. Once again, there's no frigging umlaut. It's not Mate. It's Mate. Desktop environment." And immediately Ikey comes firing right back on all cylinders. Saying Mate already exists is like saying, well, why are they doing a Super Bowl this year? They already did one last year. You know, obviously you have no idea what is going on here. Mate GTK 2, Consort GTK 3. Mate GNOME 2, Consort GNOME 3. Completely different things. Completely different.
Yeah, I've used Solus OS, I think, 1.2 or 1.3 in the past, and to see a continuation and a better version of it in 2 using a DE of his own design, I can't wait.
Yeah, and that's the whole thing. Think about what Ikey has, you want, whoever you are out there, everybody. Think about the distro, however you want to think. Think about Debian, which he's using as the back end, however you want to think. Think about PISUI, however you want to think. That's his package manager. Just boot up the distribution and play in it for a couple days, and I feel very safe in saying everyone will be gently shocked at how easy this distribution is to use. And that's, you know, all I'll say about that.
Very cool. No, yeah, I'm getting ready to install another drive in my main box for some more testing, and I definitely want to try the current alpha of Solus 2 on it, will probably be the first thing I'll slap on it, because I'm really interested to see the changes that have been made myself. So very, very looking forward to it. Thank you for the update on that door.
Very cool. And I'll say publicly, Ikey, thank you for your work. I have donated to your cause. You know, honestly, flat out gave him money. I want to see him be successful. Maybe he's Irish. Maybe there's a little bit of, you know, bias there because of that. But, you know.
Some genetic disposition.
Exactly. the man who likes a good beer is okay in my book. Or good whiskey.
We should do a whole show like this.
No, we'll lose a lot of listeners.
Yeah. Well, we could have it be a special episode on like April Fool's Day or something. Oh, yeah. Spoiler alert. And hey, April's around the corner. All right. Very cool. And now if someone did want to donate to Solus OS, is there a donate link right on the main webpage at solusos.com?
I'm 99% sure solusos.com. There's a button off to the side or at the bottom.
Fantastic. So if you already like the project, have used it in the past, or do download it soon, and would like to contribute, please do. Go check it out, because trust me, he's a one-man show. I mean, is he getting little help from people here and there, or I know he's like the main guy on it, right?
Yeah, he is basically the brainchild behind it. There's more than a couple of people helping him with actual code, but every successful Linux distribution has a benevolent dictator in one shape, way, or form. That's the sad, honest truth of it. So he's the benevolent dictator. And he happens to be in Ireland, where he can freely distribute MP3 codecs and such without any warning or any worry from the ban from the law. He can do whatever he pleases. So that's fine. Great. And I'm okay with that. I do believe he actually does have a company now that actually gave him, at least one point in time, some Monet.
Very cool. I love to see smaller teams like this produce such great products, and to have an OS with a desktop environment that is really needed in this day and age. And something I wanted to speak to Dor when you were talking about this earlier, but with the introduction of GNOME 3 and with Unity, you know, 12, 18 months ago when they first sort of entered the marketplace, they really did, Unity I would think more than GNOME 3, but they really did sort of turn, almost quash one of the really benefits to running Linux, was that it would run great on older hardware.
Yeah.
Whereas with Unity, it was just like you had to have a semi-modern system because it was so heavy. It's gotten better. But to see projects like this, I'm very, very hopeful for the future, and I wish them the best of luck.
Absolutely.
Very cool. All right, guys. Well, that was our last topic for the week, and we're going to go ahead and roll right into emails. The first email is from our good friend, Stefan Reist. Writes, hi, Cody and Dor. I hope you had a nice... before I say these, guys, I found some old emails that I hadn't injected yet, so some of these are like from December. But I'm all caught up on going through and culling through them, getting them in the show, so there isn't a huge backlog. We're addressing them now, and we're moving forward. So Stefan writes, hi, Cody and Dor. I hope you had a nice, merry, and relaxing Christmas, and wish you both good health, happiness, and Podnutsian success. Can you suggest a cheap box that is Linux install friendly? After a bit more than a year now using Linux at home, mostly Ubuntu-based distros, I would like to have a box for distro hopping, which is beginner-friendly and inexpensive. How about the following Asus Triple E box? And he provides a link to us for the Triple E box, one of the models here. It was the Triple E box PC EB1033. It almost looks like a little tiny router, but it's a full-fledged machine. Which you can plug in components to and then use it that way. What do you think about devices like this, Dor?
Hey, bottom line, I like where its heart is at a hell of a lot. In functionality, in the real world, I'm still not completely sold. I will say in general, I like it, period. I don't know about its hackability. It doesn't seem like it really gained a lot of popularity. Because I tried to find, I believe, people who installed Linux on this. And I believe I found moderate success, but not a whole lot of people. So I say with any of this stuff, you have to be very careful. For the right price, this might be very good. as a AAA PC, because that's all it is. I mean, like you said, I think, dare I say, this is smaller than a freaking router. This
thing's
so thin, built-in Wi-Fi, all kinds of goodness.
Really, really thin, yeah.
Yeah, I ain't gonna lie, I really like it. You know, I'm happy I don't have one because I may be late tonight to be on the show. Okay. It does look like you can put Ubuntu 12.10 on this. If I'm looking at this correctly, which I got to do some more digging, but that's what it looks like. I'm hesitant. I'll say that because it isn't popular. If you know, you would go into the store and see these things everywhere, I would feel much better.
Right, right. And if hackability is one of your must-have options, then yes, on more popular devices, the developers are going to be able to get behind it because they know that more of their work is going to be seen by more people. It's just a good business practice. So there's that. My overall feeling with this, and Stefan, and I'll send you an email later to make sure you listen to this because I have yet to fully respond, but know that what I'm about to say is not me trying to talk you out of making this purchase, because anything that you have to tell yourself to justify to buy something cool, just do it, okay? I love these machines because I'm more leaning toward low power devices in my home. I mean, power bills are just going to continue to go up, and especially with having multiple devices in the home, having them use up less power is just good on the environment, it's good on you, it's good on your wallet. So I like the idea of these devices. However, specifically buying one of these to test distros, I don't know if that's the best option. I can't remember exactly how much this thing is. It was somewhere between like $200 and $400.
Yeah.
What I would suggest, for those of you who haven't already done this, or listened to me talk about this before, I'll go over it real quick. One of the best things you can do to test out a modern distro, or to test out distros in general, go buy a second hard drive. I'm talking just an internal drive off podnuts.com/Amazon. You can get, you know, just a bare bones, like 160 gig drive for, you know, less than $50, right? Just get one of those, slap it in your current tower, or even you can even use it on a laptop. I'm talking just a drive that you don't care about whatsoever. And then use that to test distros. If you're putting in a tower, literally I have 3 or 4 different drives in my tower. I just take the SATA data and power cables off of the drive I'm currently using, plug it into the next drive, and now I have a completely separate environment. I don't need to worry about accidentally wiping the drive and losing data. You can try dual booting, and dual booting works, and there are good dual booting options. However, just an extra layer of protection, I don't even bother with it anymore, because it's, in my experience, it's always been more pain than pleasure. The gains haven't outweighed the costs in my experience with that. But if you absolutely want a tried and true test of real-time hardware utilization of the distro, that's a better way to go. But also think about all the live environments. If you like how a desktop environment works or a distro, you should be able to get that from running a live CD or running it in a VM. Okay, and then from there, you'll have a better idea of what your needs are and what your likes are going to be, and then have a better idea of what to install on do a native install onto a fresh machine or a new drive. So, go ahead, Dor. What were you going to say?
I can't agree more. With this one, I think it'll be maybe difficult to do the hard drive swapping, but I will say I found this out. Okay, there's an ASUS EEE box. EEEBOX EB1033-B0100 desktop. Okay, now it looks like I'm getting back the same result. Okay, apparently Ubuntu has an official way to install Ubuntu 12.04 or Ubuntu 11.10 on those boxes on Ubuntu.com itself.
Oh, very cool.
Which kind of blows me away. I will say, looking at videos on YouTube, the flash performance was scary. It didn't look very good because it looks like it's a single core 1.8 gigahertz processor. That's why.
Okay. So it's not very powerful.
Yeah, and it has a 5400 RPM drive.
Okay.
1 gig, I believe, of SSD RAM. You can upgrade to 4. That would probably help a little bit. The one thing I do like about it, though, is that it does have USB 3 ports, 2 of them, mm-hmm. and wireless N. So,
as a secondary device, something low-powered in order to have as an alternate machine, I think it would be a perfect purchase. But, and then specifically kind of what you were talking about, I wouldn't suggest taking something tiny like that and messing with the internal components unless you need to do an upgrade or a repair or replacement. But I'm talking because, I mean, chances are if you're listening to this show, you already have a computer. Okay, whether it be a laptop or a tower. And it wouldn't take you but a few minutes on Google or YouTube to research how to open those things up. Because most modern laptops will just have a door for the hard drive, and you just pull it out, plug the new one in, you're done. Or, if you really want to know how to do that, here's a shameless plug, check out the laptop repair videos at podness.com and teach you how to do it that way. But yeah, basically, find out what you like without spending money to try to do it is what I always suggest. Because more often than not, I've always fallen prey to this where I get into like a new thing. Like, for instance, when I started doing Linux, using Linux day to day, I wanted to go out and I wanted to build a new machine just to try it. But I thought to myself, one of the greatest things about this is that I can use it on the existing hardware I already have. Because, I mean, I have all sorts of laptops and towers just sitting around here. I'm not doing nothing. We all do, right? Use those first. If anything, you're breathing life into an old machine you haven't used in a while, and you're also educating yourself and sort of refining your palate as far as what you want from this system. So use that information and then go out and buy something. And we had someone actually do that, which we'll get to in a further email here. So, Stefan, I hope that helped inform your decision. Please let us know either way what you do buy and what you do end up with, because we want to hear an update from you in the future. I wish you good luck, my friend. All right. Our good friend David Christensen writes in, "Hello, Dor and Cody. I have a dream. Baseball spring training is days away, and I would like to throw the first pitch. I am the guy with the official Ohio Linux Fest 2012 autographed baseball signed by 27 podcasters, including yourselves, and a bad signature from the Cherub, a.k.a. Shups. Includes the Podnutzers, Geeksters, TLLTSers, Unbootables, etc., etc. 27, yes, 27 signatures in all. Woot. I would like to donate this ball to some kind of contest / promo that you could run on behalf of raising money for Northeast Linux Fest or Jonathan Nato's personal endeavors. I'm sure you guys will come up with something. Let me know where I can send the ball. Unfortunately, I won't be there at Northeast Linux Fest. I am home planning my OLF costume for 2013. No Comic-Con? Oh no, LOL. Regards, David Christensen, a.k.a. David Kitchener. P.S. I never miss a cast, but confused sometimes where and how to receive, i.e. Lounge, Google Meetup, Mumble, Twitch, etc.
Yeah, I got to do a better job at organizing how live content is organized and scheduled. That's totally me, Dave. And I'll say, I met Dave the last 2 years at OLF, and I know you met him this year at OLF.
Mm-hmm. It was so weird for me, because I wasn't even hosting the show yet, but it was so weird for me to be there and to have people know who I was and come up and talk to me. And David was one of them. Very, very nice. You hit us up outside of BD's Mongolian Grill after I won the clock. And had to sign the ball. And he has donated to a cause. So what Dor and I are going to do is to run some kind of a contest. We will definitely mention on next week's show. However, we'll probably be handling most of it on social media just to expedite the winners, if you will. So if you're already following us, we'll definitely start a campaign on there with which to advertise it. I already got some ideas, but anything that we can do to help raise money for Jonathan Nato would be fantastic, and I really do appreciate David's contribution. And I got to tell you, go check out his Google Plus page, because you have full photos of this ball. I'll actually post a link on mine, and Dor probably can too, but it is very cool, and I thought it was so neat to see that many signatures from just podcasters, and then to be able to sign the ball too was pretty cool for me. So I'm very excited about the future with that.
Yeah, I got to say, I can't thank David enough for doing all this. Mm-hmm. B, we're going to do our best to honor his wishes and in the best way possible raise as much money as possible for the ACF.co. Three, I can't wait to see him next year. I want to buy him a meal, a beer, a cake, something. I don't know. But I will say this. I so wanted to give him a super unbelievably loud high five. I wanted to thank nobody more at this year's OLF than David, because he basically, during Jonathan's talk, made everybody, including myself, look bad, because he basically said, and I believe he took a $20 bill and slapped it on the stage by Jonathan's feet and said, I, for one, support this and want this to do better, and I'm doing it right now. I challenge you people to do the same. It was like, whoa, this guy is serious.
Threw down a gauntlet in the form of cash money.
You know, and that basically, you know, that right there is a man posting his feelings in public. And I can't thank him enough for doing that. And at the same token, I know he's a member of the ACF. He donates. If you guys out there have good ideas how we can do this, please let us know. I know me and Cody are going to try to figure out the best we can do.
Definitely. Yeah, we'll come up with something, and then all proceeds will go to the ACF or just beer money for NELF. Maybe we'll flip a coin, figure it out, or we can do a poll. Yeah, we can do a poll. No, it'll all go to Jonathan and his endeavors, because, yeah, he has some great stuff coming down the pike, and anything we can throw his way to help him out will be much appreciated. And, David, thank you very much for that. Guys, if you have any ideas, send in an email to podcast@linksforrestofus.com or hit up Door Ride on Google+, and we'll consolidate some ideas and get back to you very soon. Very cool. All right. So Kevin O'Brien wrote in, who was our guest on episode 118. We thank him for being there. Kevin O'Brien writes in, it is not often I can improve on your answer, but I just listened to show 118 where the question was about rebooting Linux. Here is the best answer I have. And then he has a...
Well, I'll say this, Kevin. You didn't improve on the answer. You gave a link. Wikipedia is improving on the answer. Let's be fair, Kevin.
Come on, Kevin. Pardon me. He was on episode 119, where we were speaking about how to manually reboot Linux, much like a Windows alternative to Control-Alt-Delete. Gotcha. Inside, if your system locks up, and
then I'm just messing with Kevin.
No, of course. Oh, no, I'm fully serious. You didn't do this, Kevin. Wikipedia did it. You found it. shame on you for trying to take credit from one of the most legitimate news organizations on the interwebs.
Legitimate news organizations, yes.
Oh, facts are fun. Anyway, no, thank you very much, Kevin. And Kevin did post a link, which we will put into the show notes, but talking about the magic sysrec key. And man, there's just a ridiculous amount of stuff you can do with this key in conjunction with pressing other keys on the keyboard to do a variety of different things. So, and I am totally, I'm buying, well, I'll talk about this in a minute, but I'm all about utilizing the keyboard more. One of my things of 2013 is use the keyboard more. One of the things that's going to help me do that, which I haven't installed in too long, is Kupfer. I haven't been using Kupfer Door. I don't know how I forgot about it or just didn't make it into an install.
If you don't need it, you don't need it. It's always a additional thing. It's never primary. I understand.
But I love it, and it saves me time, and I should be using it because it makes me
valuable.
My time's not valuable. Well, I'm sorry, mister. Maybe once I start... let's see here. I got rid of Cherubino to co-host Linux to the Rest of Us. I took him out. Maybe I'll be on Pondus Daily soon. You better watch your back.
Okay.
I'll get that mirror app from Timster. I'll install it on your droid.
It's yours. And, you can take it.
Okay. I wouldn't mind co-hosting that. Ooh, maybe something to come. That would be fun. Okay. Well, anyway,
I'd have to back up track. Super quick. Sysrec. I, in the past, have very inappropriately held down Alt, held down Sysrec, and hit B for reboot. In this article, it reminds me there isn't a correct way of using that key to do a reboot. The way I do it is very unsafe, can cause hard drive issues, lots of other stuff, okay? If you remember this saying, reboot even if system utterly broken. Reboot even if system utterly broken. R-E-I-S-U-B. If you remember that, you can very safely reboot nearly any kind of Linux system in any kind of condition, I'll say that it's in. You basically hold down Alt, hold down Print Screen, hit R, reboot even if system utterly broken, and hit R, wait a second to 2 seconds, Alt, Print Screen, E, for the word even, and you do each one of these one at a time, waiting like a second and a half to 2 seconds between each one. It will do these steps. R, take control of keyboard back from the X server. E, send SIGTERM signal to all processes to allow them to terminate gracefully. I is for kill. Send SIGKILL to all processes, forcing them to terminate immediately. That's part of the reason why you wait a half a second to 2 seconds between each one. You want to first ask stuff to quit, and then the stuff that doesn't quit, you forcibly quit. S, flush data to disk. Sync all your data. U, unmount and remount all file systems as read only. So what you're doing is saying, give me back my keyboard, detach it from anything else running in the system, ask everything to shut down, now force everything to shut down, now flush all data from the disk, which means like all things that are in process. If you're writing a file or copying a file or there's a journaling activity going on, flush all that to get it all squared and done. Then remount everything as only read-only and then reboot. So, reboot even if system utterly broken, R-E-I-S-U-B, is a very, very utterly much, 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 much safer than any Control-Alt-Delete combination ever in existence on Windows. That is the actual proper, safe way to reboot a Linux computer when it seems like everything is locked up.
That's very interesting. I've been actually looking for something for something geek related, I would think, or something fun for my first tattoo. And I think that's going to be my first tattoo. I'm just going to get that on my forearm.
Gotcha. See, I'm always lazy. I just go to the terminal and type sudo space init space zero, which I don't think is a correct way to do it. But it immediately just shuts everything down. But I don't think anyone else should do it, I believe.
Especially not me right now on the cast.
No, not during a podcast, preferably.
No, not at all. I'm not that silly. Martin was talking about doing that right now. Martin, who's going to post links in the chat if you go away right now? Come on, man. And you're there for moral support, too. He does a great job.
He's a good guy.
He is a great guy. Oh,
and he was on Podcast Daily, just released less than a week ago.
Ooh, I know what I'm listening to tomorrow, then. Very cool. All right. Mark Neerdorf also wrote in, and his is a great, great email with a lot of different commands that we're just going to go ahead and post right in the show notes, because if I read it aloud, I know what happens to my mind when people start talking about a lot of different commands, because I can't write them down, and I can't write them down in the moment, and I can't really utilize them. But basically, Mark opened up his email with saying, on the podcast, you gave a way of listing all uninstalled packages through the bash_history. But suppose you want all the packages, not just the ones that you manually installed within the last 500 plus or minus bash commands. See the limitations? So how about a more general and useful answer? And then he goes on to basically a list. He has a huge list of commands which you can do to look at anything that was installed. no matter how long or short ago, via the command line, which is very cool because we've got a variety of different answers based on that email about four or five shows ago from another listener. So I'm really, really happy to see the community come together and give us a variety of options. So, Mark, we will post that step-by-step instructions in the show notes. For those of you who do want to view that information, he gives a great tutorial on how to do so, and I appreciate your contact.
Yeah, I'll say I've used this similar in the past. I like how he documents it. It makes it much more obvious what is going on, in my opinion, with this. I will say this guy... I can't remember his name. I believe this is the same guy who me and him connected to Nightwise's live Google Hangout during his last podcast. McVeers, I want to say, maybe. McVeers is what I keep thinking.
Oh, okay. Very cool. And yeah, I actually sent in a voicemail to... Nightwise is one of his latest episodes about reviving the netbook. So if you guys want to check out my little cameo on there, do that. But yeah, nightwise.com, another great group of podcasts that he does. If you guys are looking for add new shows into your feed, definitely check his out. Very, very good. I got a personal message to Google Plus from Paul Tobeck, which I wanted to read, which I did not include in the doc, but I just remembered. He says, Cody Cooper, okay, Super Coop, since you just flat out refused to stop talking about Bodhi, I'm downloading it now. Actually, my Ubuntu 12.04 install on my old Core 2 Duo Optiplex is getting slow and a little buggy, and I wanted to throw something lighter on there. Some of the screenshots I looked at show a Mac-style app dock. Is that built into Bodhi or something that's an add-on slash download, Paul? Paul, if you want to fib to yourself and say that I won't shut up about Bodhi and give you a reason to install and download Bodhi, go ahead. But what I've always said about Bodhi is that it's the best, it's the single best, and I mean this, best Linux distribution based on a Patrick Swayze character ever. It totally is. It shares the name with his wonderful character, Bodhi, from the 100% pure adrenaline experience that is Point Break, which is one of my favorite films of all time. But if you guys have a system that you're looking to install something new on that you want a little bit more lightweight distro on it, Bodhi is a great option, also Peppermint OS. But the dock-like application he's referring to, I believe it comes stock with Docky, which does look like a launching dock like macOS 10 would. But overall, it's a very slick interface, and the speed that you get out of it, out of Bodhi in general, on coupled with what it provides you and what kind of resources it uses while it works are all very, very good. So definitely check it out. And Paul, I wish you the best of luck with that. And that is Paul Tobeck. That is not the Paul who does our show notes. Because unlike another Podnuts host, I know the difference between my Pauls.
All right, Paul, meet Paul. Paul, meet Paul.
Yep, Paul and Paul. There's no animosity there. Let's just say I'm going to leave a almost profanity-laden voicemail to Android App Addicts this Thursday. So check it out. Almost. I'm not going to curse. You'll have to skip that show. Okay. Anyway, it was. I'm not going to get into it. You guys, a teaser. You guys, go check out the next Android App Addicts. You will hear a voicemail from me, and let's just say there will be some ripping done. Let's just say that. All in good fun, though. Okay. I did some shout outs a few weeks ago, and I was trying to do one a week. I'm going to kind of bring that back because I get reached out to by people from the community, listeners to the show, and they bring me some very, very awesome stuff. And I want to have a way to contribute that back into the community and have everyone kind of enjoy it. I got two shout-outs this week. One is to Jeff Owens, our good friend Jeff Owens, Black Hammer, and, of course, father of Ellis Owens, Clark Kent. Jeff Owens sent us a picture of his wife and granddaughter, and in the photo, she is sitting in front of a computer using Doodoo Linux. And it's D-O-U-D-O-U Linux. And if you go to doodoolinux.org /web/english/index.html, we'll have a link in the show notes. But it's a children's-based distribution. that is really, really easy to use. I went and I saw some videos of it and pictures of kind of the environment, and it looks like something that I'm sure my son will already love to start playing with, and very, very intuitive for your kids. So if you just want to introduce your kids to computing in general or just having fun on a computer, I think this would be perfect. But on top of that, it's also Linux. So like you have a Tux Paint in there, Child's Play, Psychic, a variety of games and drawing art tools. And his granddaughter was having a blast. So thank you very much, Jeff, for introducing that to me. Dor, have you heard of this distro before?
Yeah, doo-doo. I just like saying doo-doo.
Oh, yeah. And that's another thing. Kids love to say it. Oh, I played with doo-doo today.
Exactly.
Really? Yeah, all day for hours. It was great.
Fantastic.
Yep. So, yeah, check out your doo-doo. And that should be great for kids. I think it's the only time you should encourage kids to play with doo-doo. I got to stop saying that's too fun. Second shout out of the week goes to our good friend, Mr. John Zim. Now, John has been a listener of several Podnuts shows for a while, has sent in messages, emails, touched bases with several of us on Google Plus for a long, long time. And really, really do appreciate his contributions to the network. And overall, a lot of things he brings us are very, very cool. What John has done is sort of, I think, one of the things that all new users should aspire to, where he's recently built his own machine from scratch and is running a pure Linux experience on it. Instead of kind of what I was talking about earlier, using your current system with perhaps Windows or OS X to try a live environment or doing a dual boot, he's graduated to the point where he loves the format so much that he's built a machine specifically for it. And we'll post a link in the show notes. He actually posts a video of his customized Ubuntu 12.10 desktop and what he's done to it, tweaked at his specifications, and sort of shows off, puts his machine through the paces and shows what it's really capable of, and it's very cool. It's kind of like, I've never been a car guy, so I love getting into that mentality of building something of your own. You know, because it's a lot of the same way, because we get to tweak, you know, different parts and do performance tests and all this and, you know, get together with the guys and talk about it. But to have him so excited to the point where he wanted to share that with us, because he credits us to a lot of his education in Linux, I think it was very cool to watch that video, and I can just imagine how happy he is with that system. In relation to that, he posted a to-do list after installing Ubuntu 12.10 Quantum Quetzal, and that link will also be in the show notes, and that is a huge, huge list of stuff. Did you check that out, Dor?
Oh, I just glanced at it. Much too much of a list for me.
Yeah, it's huge.
Yeah, but I will say I did two of the three things I looked at. It made sense to me. I'll say that. I'll say real quick on his video, notice the extreme clarity of that desktop, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Looks really sharp. He obviously has at least a modest video card in it and a modest monitor, because the resolution he's getting is superb. And on the right side, you'll notice Conky. I love Conky. And he is one of the guys who, when he saw he could get basically real-time updates from all these different parts of his computer on his desktop and take nearly zero computing power up, he was on it. He was on it. And he has basically self-taught himself, learned a little bit, copied from other people to get his custom Conky up and running. And I will say, he makes Unity look good. That's all I'll say. He makes it look good. So hats off to you, John.
Yes, John. Thank you very much for posting that link. If you guys just want to check out, and another thing about him too, and this sort of speaks to what I've talked about for a while, is that everyone has that one distro that they tried first or that they really felt comfortable in, but every once in a while you really have to do yourself the service and try something different. John is a big fan of PinGuy OS, and which is a derivative of Ubuntu. But one of the things that he really liked about PinGuy was the fact that it came with Conky pre-installed. Well, now he's taken a stock Ubuntu system and tweaked it to his specifications, so he is graduated to the next level. On top of building his own machine from scratch and then tweaking the OS as well, so very, very happy to see that. If you guys haven't tried something like that before, definitely check it out. His video is really inspiring, and then also seeing that huge, huge list of things you can do. It's not just little tiny explanations, but I mean, different programs, what they do, where to get them, how to install them. Very, very comprehensive list of everything you can do to really make Ubuntu bend to your will, I will say.
Yeah, very cool. Thank Jeff and John a lot. And I'm also going to slip in here, I think as we were doing this cast, Jonathan Nadeau released a YouTube video update for Indiegogo's Sonar campaign. So I'm going to slip the audio in here before we end. So I got to thank Jonathan for continuing moving on. He still needs support with this. Republish it, reshare it, Facebook like it, go to the page, click on the tweet button, do what you have to do to get this thing better traction out there, people. He's still like 22 days to go, and he still has a ways to go, so we need to support him on this.
Definitely. And much what I spoke to earlier in the episode, do whatever you can on Google Plus or any sort of other online social media to help get the word out about this, because if you can't contribute monetarily, we understand, because times can be tough for everybody. But if you can at least get the word out there and do what you can to spread the word, we'd be much appreciated.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Are you going to play that now, Dora, or just enter it in later?
I'll just enter it in later, because if I play it now,
okay,
you're not going to hear it, and the live listeners won't.
Okay, no problem. Speaking, again, about kind of what John Zim did, one of the things I want to ask the community, and one of the things that makes us very strong is sharing information with each other. I've been blessed by being contacted by some really great individuals, not only through the show, but even before my involvement with the show, with some great tips, some hand-holding, leading me through some very difficult times that I was having with a variety of issues. But just overall, people sharing their good experiences with Linux. What I would like to see is also resurrect the Podnuts forums. There's still quite a bit of activity there. But we'll go ahead and create a thread about like my Linux rig. If you guys want to post photos of your machine, and then even maybe perhaps some desktop videos of what your personal environment looks like, we'd love to see it. So definitely check that out.
Very cool. Look forward to that.
Yep, anything we can do, because I can honestly say I haven't been in the forums in way too long, and I love reading forums. And on Android App Addicts, I think a couple weeks ago, you guys were talking about an update for Tapatalk HD on like a tablet version. Which, if you guys have a mobile device, and if you are a fan of forums, and if you're not using Tapatalk, give it a try, because it's just, it changes the way that you'll be able to navigate that much quicker. It's awesome.
Yeah, good stuff.
Very cool. All right, guys. Well, we are about to wrap up here. Door, where can we find you if we want to get in touch with you?
Well, I just keep telling people, just go to doortodoorgeek.com for quote-unquote instant access to me. And I'm most prevalent on Google Plus as a social network, but I will say the best, most solid, easiest, simplest way to contact me is just email. You can email me at either mail@podnuts.com or door@podnuts.com or door-to-door-geek@podnuts.com or door-to-door-geek@gmail.com.
Very cool. I think
that's all of them. Yeah.
Yeah. For now. We'll see.
For now. Until tomorrow.
When are you going to get your smdcomputer.net email address?
Oh, I've had that for a while. Steve@smdcomputer.net. Don't worry.
Oh, right.
Don't worry. It's me. Even if I say it's not me, it's me. I'm just playing with you.
It's totally him. But if you're going to contact him through there, you need to do only the most difficult questions. And if he doesn't respond to you within 5 minutes, just keep sending it over and over again. And trust me, that'll get your request bumped to the top of the queue, mm-hmm, and get you that much answered that much quicker.
Right. And there's a secret word. If you say divorce a attorney to steve@smdcomputer.net, you get pushed right up to the top of the list.
No comment. That might work. Yep. Okay. That threw me for a loop, Door. I'm Cody Cooper. You can definitely contact me on Google Plus. I'm on it literally all the time, all day. However, feel free to utilize my Podnuts email address, which I have yet, I think, to have received anything from Cody@podnuts.com. I have my own. I've graduated to that level of a Podnutsian where I have my own Podnuts email address. And for $5,000 cash donation, you can have one too. I'm throwing that out there. It's not a thing yet, but it will be. So yeah, hit me up there on Google Plus, or just Google Plus, or that email address is pretty much the best way. We have yet to receive any voicemails as of late, so if you want to get a voicemail to the show, please call 7076-PODNUT. That is 707-676-3688. We'd love to hear your feedback in voice form.
Oh, we did actually have one voicemail. I was a slacker. Jeff, next week, I promise.
Oh, Jeff Owens?
Yeah.
Oh, he sent another one.
Jeff, yeah.
Very cool. Okay. Well, then, yeah, we'll definitely play that next week. Thank you for sending that in to Jeff. And if you guys do want to catch us live right now, much speaking to Stefan, David earlier, how to catch us live. You can watch Linux the Rest of Us live every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on YouTube via our Google Plus link, which we will post via Google Plus, Dora and I both, shortly before the cast. But we almost always start right on time, if not just a few minutes late. So regardless, start to follow us if you're not already on Google Plus, and you can watch the show live. Please send in all emails to the show at podcast@linuxtherestofus.com. If you want to support Podnuts, please use the following links, and remember, you don't pay any extra for using the links below. Podnuts.com/Amazon, Podnuts.com/Newegg, Podnuts.com/eBay, Podnuts.com/deals, and Podnuts.com/clothing. We do still have some clothing items available, and dare I say, some possible additions in the near future. And finally, one last plug. Please remember the ACF.co, our good friend Jonathan Nato, with his sonar project and the ACF. For as little as $2 a month, you can donate to the ACF, which is bringing accessible computing to those people who definitely need it, who would be left behind otherwise. You can do your part for as little as $2 a month. Please do that if you can. I'm Cody Cooper, signing off. And remember, Linux is not just for the rest of us. It is for all of us. Good night.